Welcome to the 215th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. I am broadcasting in the beginning of a thunderstorm. So Florida afternoon thunderstorms are upon us. Welcome to the rain, though, and some water. It's good for the garden, good for the trees. I'm harvesting mangoes in the backyard, harvesting mangoes from the neighbor's trees because they don't like mangoes. It's a great thing. I've already had some that we've cut up and put in freezer bags. I've made some mango with chia seeds and a little agar powder into a little bit of a fruit spread. So it's all good. It's definitely mango season. Today in nutrition class, I did a mango chutney. Addie Delaney Meinrich loves fall and pumpkins. I love summer and mango. So everything mango. In our cookbook, just a short little plug, mango blueberry crumble is also a really good dessert. But I got to say the mango chutney is really good. So check out our cookbook. Mango chutney is not in the cookbook, but certainly the crumble is. But a lot of good recipes that we you enjoy making that don't take that long. So check it out. You can get the cookbook on Amazon. You can ask your local bookstore to order it because it now is available where books are sold. I have a funny cookbook story. Actually, two funny cookbook stories. So my mother, the diva, Alfreda Delaney, was at our local grocery store. We have Publix down in Florida. And she inadvertently locked her keys in her car. And she was standing in the parking lot and she saw a lady and she asked her for help because she had her cell phone in her car and whether she could borrow her cell phone. And the lady says, "Oh, you're the diva from the cookbook. I know Dr. Delaney." So the diva is officially famous. The other thing that happened again in Publix, one of the members had her cookbook in the grocery cart and she was looking for ingredients. And while she was away from her cart, somebody lifted her cookbook. So there's a hot plant-based wellness cookbook out there someplace. So if you stole a plant-based cookbook from a grocery cart this weekend, you put it to good use anyway. Make some of the recipes, post it on Facebook so we can see some of the recipes you made. And I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you get optimal health and wellness. Potluck in class today was, again, a great success. We had all kinds of great dishes, corn chowder, bean squash chili, carrot ginger soup, baked beans and garden cornbread muffins. I did a mango chutney over zucchini, carrots, and quinoa. There was salt rosin bread one of the members made. There was an Irish soda bread. There were date balls. There were lentils over greens. There was a lentil pea dish with walnuts and carrots. So great variety. Oh, and we had for dessert watermelon pops. So you can get little, you know, the little freezer pops that you can get in the grocery store. You can buy the plastic BPA-free containers at Amazon. And someone did fruit juice, just, you know, pureed fruit. So watermelon in the blender and into the bags and froze them. Banana, watermelon, and I think a strawberry banana. So they were great popsicles. So if you have children, that is a great way to have snacks for the summertime. Just throw the whole fruit into your blender and then put it into the squeeze plastic little bags. And you're ready with homemade popsicles or push-ups, whatever you used to call them, freezy pops, whatever you used to call them when you were growing up. Ironman training is going well. Swim, bike, run, a couple of sessions of weight training still going on. I'm adding some speed sessions to my and to the end of my runs, also some hill sessions because the run in Chattanooga is pretty hilly. So I'm trying to right now do increased duration of uphill running on the treadmill. Here in Florida, we don't have much in the way of hills, a few little bridges. So I come home for the last 2 miles and do my interval work as well as the hill training on a treadmill. That's going well. A couple strength training sessions a week. Biking and swimming. We're still working on the breathing aspect of things. That is actually becoming easier. Again, did another 14-mile run on minimal calories. without any leg cramping or anything. I was hungry at the end, but really felt good with the decreased caloric needs, and I really attribute that to the nasal breathing. As we talked about on the podcast a couple weeks ago, if you haven't listened to the podcast with Patrick McGowan, it's a great one. But, you know, he talks about if you start off running, breathing through your nose and you're not used to it, you need to really start out slow and warm up. And part of that is when you breathe in through your nose, you release nitric oxide. It causes your bronchioles to dilate, so you get more air in as you go. So that takes a little bit of time. You also get vasodilatation in your leg arteries as you warm up, and so that makes it easier as well. So you got to start out a little slower because it's taking a little while to get those systems up and running. But once you do, you can settle in and actually feel quite good about it. So I continue to practice that. I don't focus on it during my intervals or high heart rate training at this point. I see how far I can go, and I'm keeping track of my pace and my heart rate and what I'm tolerating. So hopefully that'll become better and better as time goes on. I also focus on making sure I'm opening up my rib cage, keeping my rib cage over my spine and not leaning back too much, because that also impedes a good breath and good diaphragm movement. So it's all good things to work on and to self-talk. And I think that's kind of the topic of today is self-talk, whether it be training and watching your breathing pattern, watching your gait, and, you know, assessing, you know, this hurts, that hurts, or this is tired, that is tired. Is it really bad, or is it just coming and going? Because I think if you start, you know, you start watching when you're training, some things hurt, then it goes away or settles down. And it's not anything to panic over. It's just different muscle groups are, you know, kind of giving you the, do you want to quit? And then you say, no, I don't. And then they let go. And then maybe something else will perk up. So, you know, self-talk is good. Sometimes I don't really think I want to go out for a long run, and I'll start out with, okay, let's do three. Three turns into six, six turns into nine, nine turns into a longer run. And you just kind of have to talk yourself through it. And you also have to do that when you're starting out eating plant-based. You know, I hear a lot about when people go out to dinner, they go out with their friends that aren't plant-based, and they nag them to try something, or they get something that's tempting, and then they the people that are trying to be plant-based end up caving. You got to do a little self-talk and create a little bit of space. You know, great quote by Viktor Frankl. And Man's Search for Meaning is, you know, the between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space, you can find your power to choose your response. I think you can really apply that to how you eat as well. When you're tempted by things, if you can create a little bit of a space and start to, you know, talk to yourself. Why am I doing this? I'm going to be plant strong. I'm going to remain vegan. And give yourself the self-talk as well as a little space, you can continue to do and you know what you're really after, and then you can be happy with the rewards. You might be a little bit out of your comfort zone, but that's a good thing as well, because out of your comfort zone means that you're growing as opposed to just staying where you are and continuing to spin your wheels. And that comfort zone applies to training. You know, getting out of your comfort zone, pushing yourself a little harder, a little faster, a little longer. It applies to your food choices. And it also applies to your interaction with other people, getting yourself out of your comfort zone, meeting new people, and becoming more involved. There's a recent study looking at people with a purpose. They looked at people 50 to 61. They followed them over 1,100 people for many years. And the people that, you know, had a sense of purpose did much better as far as longevity and health-wise than people that didn't have a sense of purpose. So again, pushing yourself initially out of a comfort zone that you might not want to do something, but in the end, it almost always leads to something positive. There's a tremendous amount of self-confidence and positivity gained by those participating in the potluck. You know, they made food that was pleasing to the eye. They had great feedback. They interacted with other people. They got support from other people in the class. And it gives them the confidence to go and give it to neighbors or bring it to potlucks or share it with friends and family that aren't plant-based. because they know they have something good. So it's nice to try it out on people that, you know, are plant-based and not judgmental. The people in our membership practice and the people that come especially to the nutrition classes are people that have struggled with heart disease, diabetes, valvular heart disease, autoimmune diseases, inflammatory diseases, arthritis, eating disorders, and they're all thriving eating a plant-based diet, and they all support each other, and it's not a, you know, let's get together and talk about our illnesses. It's all get together and celebrate our win through plant-based nutrition. So I think it's such a positive experience. And, you know, the potluck day is certainly my nutrition class 3 favorite day of the 6-week block. And it's not that as for the nutrition level 2, my intermediates, because they're still struggling with actually taking that step outside the comfort zone to make plant-based food. And they still struggle with one foot in the plant-based world and one place and one foot in the traditional standard American diet. They want to be healthy drastically. They know plant-based eating is the better way to go, but they just can't quite make that leap into completely committing to being plant-based and to cooking plant-based. And, you know, some people look at it as a struggle. Some people look at it like they don't like to cook. But it's more about, you know, being inside versus outside. I have to, you know, I'll admit to you right up front that if I had my brothers, I would be playing outside most of the time. I enjoy doing yard work better than housework. I hire my housework done. I do my own yard work. I'd rather be outside running and biking and swimming than being inside most of the time. I do enjoy my quiet time reading and so forth. But, you know, I really thrive when I'm outside. But I also enjoy cooking. And it takes time, and you have to go get groceries, and you have to think about it a little bit. But it's creative. And I think everybody is a little bit creative. They just have to get past that, oh, I don't like to cook type of thing. It's like, well, look at it a little differently. You know, people say, I don't like something prepared a certain way, or haven't found a way that I like to eat something yet. But to keep an open mind about cooking, I haven't, you know, it's looking at a difference, not as a chore, not as something you have to do, but something you have the opportunity to do, to be completely in control of your own nutrition and well-being and health. And when you give that to somebody else, they're not going to take care of it nearly as much as you do. And when you give it to somebody else, or you say, I don't care what I'm about to eat, then you're saying that I am not that worried about, or I am not that, I don't see the connection between what I eat and what my health is. Or I'll let somebody else take care of my health. I think there's a big disconnect in the baby boomer era people where, you know, we think that I have good insurance. If something happens to me, there'll be a cure. We have great health care here in the United States, and somebody will take care of me. There's always something new as advertised on TV. Well, the truth is, it's just not that good. We spend a lot of money on so-called health care, but it's more of a business in the United States than it is a compassion anymore. And I had a discussion with someone in a large private practice, a primary care, and, you know, they have the option of seeing, you know, 40 or 50 people a day, or seeing fewer people and then just billing a lot of billable procedures on those people. And that's the way they're able to make a living, because that's what the healthcare system supports. Either you can test people for everything and diagnose and you know, make yourself feel good that you're maybe detecting pathology early, and that hopefully there's something to do about it. But we know right now there's not a whole lot to do about it. There's things that we can do to put Band-Aids on things that slow death down, but it doesn't slow morbidity down. It doesn't slow suffering down. Because once you're broken, The replacement parts aren't near as good as the original equipment. The medication all have side effects that, you know, we learn more and more about side effects from medications every day because they enter a pathway, and we have so many pathways in our body that to think that you interrupt one pathway, for instance, anticholinergic drugs, those are drugs associated with decreasing incontinence or decreasing or improving lung function like Atrovent or Parkinson's or, you know, some of these other neurological conditions associated with psychiatric medication and some antidepressants and some reactions to, inflammation. They affect a pathway that also affects pathways in the brain, which are now, we're finding out that increase the risk of dementia. So these pathways, yes, the medicine helps one thing, but it ends up causing another. And so we become, it becomes take one medicine, take another medication for what breaks because of the interruption of a certain pathway. So we can have a healthcare system that is like that, or we can, turn our attention to what we can actually do as individuals to prevent the pathology from happening in the first place. And we have to make the connection between what we eat, what we wear, what we inhale, and what we do with our bodies, how that affects our health. And, sitting in a chair, we know, and if you watch more than 4 hours of TV a day, this is associated with, a much worse decline than if you were moving around. So, if you choose to do that, even an hour of vigorous activity is not enough to overcome sitting in a chair watching TV. So we have to move our bodies. We weren't meant to sit inside and just be stagnant in a chair. Resting is not an option as far as, 24/7. We have to get good rest when we get rest. People say they can't sleep. Well, they can't sleep because they've never really exerted themselves to the point of exhausting their body enough to be able to actually get good sleep. And then there's obviously there's a lot of other things involved in sleep as far as respiration and breathing patterns and, a whole host of other stressors that people deal with every day. But certainly, the idea of, sedentary behavior and saving yourself, you won't make yourself last longer by being sedentary. You won't make yourself last longer by not getting out of your comfort zone. And I think it's something that we all have to deal with. As a runner, I'd rather be in an area, the comfortable is the slow, comfortable, easy pace. But if you always run in the slow, comfortable, easy pace, then that becomes your pace. You never get much, the improvement is very, very slow. The slope decreases a tremendous amount. When you push yourself, yes, maybe there's a little bit more increased risk of injury, but again, that injury leads to an improved recovery and better than you were before, so to speak. So, the comfort zone, we need to be, to learn to change gears in all aspects of our lives. The breathing has a lot to do with that. It helps, our brainstem function connecting with our autonomic nervous system helps us to be able to change gears. To be able to have a top speed and a low speed and speeds in between, because we don't necessarily, just need to have that two or three gears in the middle. If you've ever driven a stick car, a stick shift transmission, starting out in third or fourth gear is not very easy. It takes you a long time to get going. You'd like to start out in first gear, rev the engine a little bit, and then shift up. We'd like to be able to do that in our daily lives as well, but for some reason, we're told and made to believe that we need to stay in this easy zone. Don't stress yourself. Stay steady. Chemically restrain yourself so that you're not too high, not too low. And, we get stuck in the middle and we can't change gears. I can't remember the reference on the study, but they had cyclists and they were having them cycle to the maximum output that they could possibly do. And then they showed them really quick pictures of smiley faces, and they flashed them so quick on the screen that they really couldn't discern that they were actually smiley faces. But even just the quick flash made them able to cycle a little bit longer, and certainly positive images made them cycle a little bit longer. And anybody that's running a marathon, you can be feeling really horrible, and you get to a turn where there's a lot of people, and they're ringing the cowbells, and they're screaming, and doesn't matter if you're screaming at you. You know, I've been in races where there's somebody screaming for somebody, just seems like everywhere, and they're screaming the same guy. But after a while, it starts to be for you in your own head, and you pick up the pace a little bit. So, you know, there's such a component in your head that this positive self-talk will really propel you along. And, you know, so if a total stranger can make you do better, just think what you can do for yourself. And if you cheer for somebody else, they do better. So why not, you know, why don't we cheer for ourselves? We rarely do that. We give ourselves negative talk. You know, I can't, I won't, this hurts. It's too uncomfortable. I don't like the food. It's not what I'm used to, as opposed to I can do this. You know, I like greens. I like beans. I like feeling good. I don't like joint pain. I can be plant-based, you know, so try some positive self-talk the next time you get into these situations. I've never cooked for people before, but I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm going to make something that I know I really like, and that's colorful and pleasing to the eye, and give it a try. Because I think that, and that you enjoy even, so you don't have to make it further. If you make something that you really enjoy and bring it and bring it in a nice dish so that you can show, you know, your creation. It's self-talk. It's being confident, not just looking for what bad things can go wrong. Sometimes you just have to generate your own positive energy to get you over the hump. There was a study recently published looking at doing CT scans and PET scans on people with obstructive sleep apnea. And again, obstructive sleep apnea means there's some mechanical reason, most likely that their airway declines, some muscle component, that they quit breathing and their oxygen drops for prolonged periods multiple times throughout their sleep cycle. And when that happens and the oxygen drops into the blood, it takes a pretty good effort to get your oxygen saturation to drop below 90%. If you've ever sat with a pulse ox on your finger that looks at, you know, uses infrared to look at the oxygen, the capillaries and the oxygen saturation, you know, you can hold your breath for a minute and your oxygen saturation doesn't drop. So these people have significant apneic episodes to really drop their oxygen. And what happens is you're not getting blood flow to your tissues, you're not getting blood flow to your coronary arteries, you get constriction, you get increased inflammatory markers. The heart enlarges because it has to work harder because all the arteries in the lungs start to constrict because they're trying to get more oxygen to deliver more oxygen to the tissues. And what they've noted with the PET CT scan recently is that the coronary arteries, their ability to dilate and the flow reserve during stress is decreased in these individuals. So it's a matter of the microcirculation more so than even than the arteries that sit on top of the heart that you can actually see. And, you know, so they develop this small blood vessel disease early on because everything is being strained so much. And, of course, the research suggests that, you know, maybe people should be scanned more often and maybe they need more cardiac scans to look at their coronary arteries if they have obstructive sleep apnea, because most likely there could be something going on not only with the microcirculation but with the actual coronary arteries themselves. Never mentioned was maybe we should, one, look into why these people have obstructive sleep apnea. Are they overweight? Then we need to, you know, have them lose weight, and you lose weight not only in your chest and allows your diaphragm and your rib intercostal muscles to move better, but it also, you lose weight in your tongue and your neck, and some of the obstruction can be relieved. But, you know, the diet in general, as far as vasodilatation of the coronary arteries and microcirculation, the very thing that you get when you eat greens and chew them, you produce nitric oxide via the microbes in your tongue and in your digestive enzymes. So eating a good plant-based diet is going to be protective and right up front in those people with sleep apnea. So plant-based nutrition should be number one in anyone that has obstructive sleep apnea on how to protect themselves. Yes, the CPAP mask forces oxygen, air and tries to keep the airway open, but we also need the delivery of good nutrients and decreased inflammation. And, you know, of course, like Patrick and I talked before, the development of good respiratory patterns, good breathing patterns while you're awake also makes a difference as well. But what you eat is so important as far as your microcirculation and your macrocirculation. If your body mass index is increased, there is an increased risk associated with an increased fat mass. There is an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, as we know, pulmonary emboli, deep venous thrombosis, hypertension, arrhythmias. But even more so, there's a 46% increased risk in aortic stenosis, which is the valve that lets the blood out of the heart. We've always thought that this just happened as aging. People that have a bicuspid valve tend to have, that valve tends to wear out more than a tricuspid valve. But now we're seeing more and more that what you eat really matters with regard to valvular heart disease. We've always known it with renal disease, people that have kidney problems, an increased creatinine, decreased kidney function, develop severe calcification of the mitral valve, and the mitral valve starts to leak or to have regurgitation. So now we're looking at the aortic valve. So what you eat affects your heart valve function. Again, the original equipment is always better than the replacement parts. So, you know, hang on to your original equipment, eat properly, and so that you can protect your heart valves. Back to the old primary care testing to try to identify pathology so that some medication can be thrown at it to slow it down is osteoporosis. If you walk into any Walgreens or drugstore or Costco, you see rows and rows of calcium supplements and vitamin D supplements. There was a recent study released that, again, looking at 21 trials, doing a meta-analysis on over 83,000 people, there was no benefit in cardiovascular disease or mortality associated with giving people vitamin D. We know the best way to get vitamin D is to go out in the sunshine without sunscreen on, not to get burned, but to have sun exposure. There's nothing, you know, again, I'm going to go out to the microbes. Everything's better outside. Your body was meant to be in tune with nature. It's a calming effect. It helps you change gears, but it also provides you with a natural source of vitamin D. And you don't have to worry about the levels, because even people that get vitamin D, that have sun exposures and their vitamin D levels don't change, they do better. But taking a supplement, you're not going to get any benefit from cardiovascular disease or mortality from any cause. So, you know, leave the supplements behind. Don't rely on the pills to protect you. What about osteoporosis? The best thing you can do is weight-bearing exercise. When you pound the ground and put your mass against the ground and you run or you walk, lift weights, you are generating bone and muscle. And by keeping your muscles tight, you're keeping your bones from shifting on each other. You're not wearing out your joints as much. There have been multiple studies looking at, you know, footwear, and people that wear big, heavy padded shoes tend to hit the ground harder than people that don't, you know, as far as running goes and potential injuries. I was very irritated this week to hear a strength coach saying that people shouldn't go out and jog. It was a useless exercise. Well, it's not a useless exercise, because even if you're jogging, and like we went back before into a, you know, a zone one or zone two, you're actually improving your oxygen consumption and improving your cardiovascular conditioning. You're improving your biomechanics. You're improving your bone mass. And by being outside, you're also improving your well-being. So bottom line, don't take vitamin D or calcium supplements. Get out and move your body. So it's pretty neat. I think there's all kinds of things you can do to improve the gears that you have, from doing some breath work and looking at your heart rate to slow your heart rate down, to get into that parasympathetic state, to make sure you're breathing light and from your diaphragm to get into that parasympathetic state, and then challenging yourself, intervals or picking up the pace or going up hills or doing some breath holds to get into the sympathetic state. And then throughout the day, doing and being conscious of your breath, as far as nice, easy inspirations and expirations. So all that allows you to get more in touch with your autonomic nervous system, so you have more control and more gears to go through for what life throws at you, whether it's an emotional stress or a physical stress, to be able to handle it, because your body has more than full on or full off. So finally, there's a good challenge coming up here next week, and it's 4th of July. So you have to think about what you're going to do for 4th of July weekend. Lots of cookouts, celebrations. Corn on the cob is a great plant-based alternative. Potato salad, made plant-based style. Pasta salads with dressings that are mustard and vinegar. Again, the mango blueberry crumble or a giant fruit salad. One of my favorite desserts here lately has been a watermelon with a frozen banana and ice made into a slushy. It's delicious. So, that's a good for after playing volleyball on 4th of July or being outside, a good recovery drink. So there, carrot dogs, and we have beet burgers in the cookbook, regular veggie burgers, all great, great alternatives. There are really good alternatives for ribs, as far as with vital wheat gluten to make riblets, baked beans. Again, we have a great recipe in the cookbook. I have to give a shout out to, and I don't think he'll mind me saying his name, but Scott. Scott made baked beans from our cookbook and the garden cornbread muffins that were really fabulous. It never ceases to amaze me of how great the guys in our practice cook and present their food. So some really artistic things at the potluck. So, it's easy to really stay plant-based through the holidays. You just have to a little self-talk saying, this is the way I want it. This is, I want to be healthy. I want to be active, and I want to prevent disease. I want to stay well. It's a lot easier to stay well than it is to reverse things once they get going. Not impossible by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a lot easier not to get sick in the first place. And don't let anybody tell you that there's not a connection between what you eat and what your health is, whether it's from the sun or inside or outside your body, inflammation in your joints or inflammation in your arteries, it's all associated with what you're eating. So I hope you enjoy your 4th of July. If you're going to set off fireworks, be very, very careful. I would recommend going to see fireworks as opposed to setting them off yourself, because there's always injuries somewhere. There is a significant risk, no matter how careful you are, with these things exploding, because they are explosive. So go watch fireworks from afar as opposed to setting them off yourself. Enjoy some exercise the day before you go to that cookout, so that if you do overindulge in even plant food and the amount of calories, that you're able to handle it. Remember, we don't want to fill the metabolic waste garage and overfill it. That's when bad things start to happen. So make sure you continue to exercise so that the calories that you consume are a good nutrients and put to good use, not just used for storage. If you go ride a bike, get a light on the bike, preferably the front and the back, so that you can be seen. A flashing light, red for the back, white for the front. Wear a helmet. Don't text and drive, and watch out for distracted drivers that might be under the influence this weekend. So be healthy. Spread the plant-based wisdom. Do it with a smile. Be happy. And I'll talk to you next week. Please send us any email or questions at jamie@drdelaney.com, J-A-M-I, at Dr. Delaney, all spelled out, DocTorDulaney. Love to hear from you. Remember, we put out a weekly blog, both myself and Addie Delaney Meinrich. So there's two blogs you can sign up to get delivered to you, or just go to the website and check it out. We have this podcast, and we have a free newsletter that always has a recipe on it. So if you'd like to sign up for that, we'd love to send you a recipe and some healthful tips. So look forward to hearing from you. Go to Amazon and check out the book. Get a copy. If you buy the book, you can get an ebook for $2.99. It's nice to have that to travel with, so you can have a quick recipe at your fingertips when you're at the Airbnb wondering what to cook. You can also get it from our website. Or stop by our office if you're in town, and we'd love to personally sign it. The diva's got her pen all sharpened up. I'll be giving a talk and a book signing here in town next, I guess it will be at the end of the week. I'll be at the Venice meetup group on Monday, though, to do book signing. So if you do live in the area and like to stop by and say hi, love to meet you. Until then, have a great weekend.